From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Vermont's historic image is all covered bridges, maple syrup, snowy slopes, and town after town where people walk out their doors and don't bother to lock up. The Green Mountain State is still a lovely corner of the country. But like many other corners, said its governor last week in his State of the State address, it now has a full-blown crisis of heroin and prescription opiate abuse. Arrest and treatment rates soaring, no end in sight. This hour on Point, Vermont rings the alarm on the nation's heroin crisis. Last week in Vermont, Governor Peter Shumlin stepped to the podium and essentially devoted his entire State of the State speech to an explosion of heroin use and more in Vermont.
In Vermont since 2000, we've seen more than a 770% increase in treatment for all opiates. What started as an OxyContin and prescription drug addiction problem in Vermont has now grown into a full-blown heroin crisis.
You give over your entire State of the State speech to heroin abuse, and you get people's attention in Vermont and well beyond. Joining me now from Burlington, Vermont, is Governor Peter Shumlin, two-term Democratic governor of Vermont. He turned heads across the country last week with his bracing State of the State speech on heroin. Governor Shumlin, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, Tom, great to be with you.
It seems like a big decision to put everything else to the side, as you essentially did, and just look at heroin and opiate abuse. Why, Governor?
Well, really, the challenge with this disease is that we won't talk about it. Families don't like to talk about it. Those, obviously, who are addicted are scared about talking to it about it. And politicians certainly don't want to talk about it. And, you know, Vermont is a place where we have the most extraordinary quality of life in the country. We trust each other. We take care of each other. We know each other. And I just felt that it was time for me to use my role as governor to talk about an issue that does threaten our quality of life and that has solutions if we're willing to have the courage to address them.
You rolled it out and got everybody's attention well beyond the borders of Vermont. Give us the numbers that you rolled out in Vermont on the evidence of what you call a full-blown crisis.
Well, you know, like so many other states, obviously we've seen a huge increase in the number of folks being convicted of dealing heroin and other opiates. We have seen a huge increase in the number of folks who are actually ready for treatment, but for whom we don't even have treatment capacity because the numbers are growing so large. And we've seen an increase in crime as a result of people's need to feed their addiction and stealing to do it.
Twice as many federal indictments, you told Vermonters in 2013, over the couple of years previous, 250% increase in people receiving heroin treatment, double the number of deaths in Vermont from heroin overdose, up and up. And still, what is it about this? It's terrible, but, you know, we've got employment issues, you've got all environmental issues, you've got everything. What is it that you saw or have seen that made you say, you know what, I'm going to clear the decks and just talk with my fellow Vermonters about this?
Really, when you see the story of those who are addicted and you listen to them, it breaks your heart. I mean, these are folks who, you know, I've got young kids. I pointed out in the speech one example of an incredibly brave young man, grew up on his dairy farm. We got a lot of farms in Vermont, a very loving family, a very hardworking family, got offered OxyContin during exams at 10th grade in high school, became an addict hard and fast. Turned into a full-blown heroin crisis, as it often does. And, you know, these are lovable, extraordinary people who have a healthcare addiction, an addiction that is a health crisis now. And I just felt that when you hear the stories and you realize these are our kids, these are our neighbors, you got to address it.
What's the pathway from the opiate prescription opiates originally distributed by doctors to heroin abuse, Governor?
Well, you know, if we think that there's not a link between FDA-approved opiates like OxyContin and our heroin challenge in America, you know, we're fooling ourselves. The fact of the matter is that over a decade ago, we approved OxyContin. We handed out with great exuberance. And once you become addicted to that, now the economics are such that the pills, the OxyContin on the street, once your doc shuts you off, is more expensive than heroin on the streets. And my economic challenge, you know, forgetting our hearts for a minute and just thinking with our heads, is that you can buy a bag of heroin in cities south of us for $6, $5, $4 a bag, and it sells here for $30 a bag. So you can do the math. There's a huge economic incentive for dealers to come into our state and other rural states around us to sell this stuff at a great profit, get folks hooked, and build up a clientele. So we're fighting a battle that is certainly related to our approval of FDA-approved opiates, then leads to cheaper options, which is heroin, once you get addicted. And, you know, I know that we're talking about the most extraordinarily beautiful state in the country, but, you know, we're kidding ourselves if we think that this isn't happening in all the, in the other 49 states. We're losing the battle, and my point is we have to come up with a better way of dealing with it. We can't arrest our way out of this challenge. We've got law enforcement here in Vermont that's better than anywhere, extraordinary United States attorneys, prosecutors, and the rest. But, you know, if we continue to think that we can just solve this with law enforcement alone, we're going to continue to lose the battle.
Well, look at that. Here's a little bit from a documentary by Vermont filmmaker Bess O'Brien called The Hungry Heart. You cited it in your speech. Looks at the world of heroin, prescription drug addiction. Here she is talking with Ashley, then a single mother in her early 20s from the Burlington, Vermont area. Said it all started with a single painkiller.
The first pill I used was a Percocet and Vicodin, and then it moved on to Oxycontin. And then it went to heroin.
To heroin. The governor of Vermont now ringing the bell loudly about that. And, of course, it's a problem not just in Vermont. What's the profile of the user? Is there a profile of the user in Vermont, Governor Shumlin?
Tom, it's really important to remember that this affects all income categories and all families that regardless of income. Now, obviously, a lack of hope and a lack of opportunity is more likely to drive you to a sense of hopelessness that brings about this kind of addiction. But listen, I've got this problem in my areas where we got low-income folks living, and I got this problem in areas where I have high-income folks living. It can affect anyone. And the interesting thing is, since I've raised this issue across the state, I just left my local Chamber of Commerce, Champlain Chamber here in Burlington. You know, every time I go into a crowd now of 60, 70 people, I have at least three or four that come up to me and say, thank you. My son's addicted. My daughter's addicted. This is our problem. These are our kids, and it affects all incomes.
You were born in Vermont. You've been there a long time. What do you think is driving this increase? What's shooting it up? Is something going on in the culture, in the economy, something else? What?
I have no doubt in my mind that when we chose to legalize opiates in pill form, as we see in Oxycontin and other painkillers, we made a decision to make opiates available in ways that we hadn't in the past. And if we think that there's not a link between FDA-approved opiates and what people are buying on the streets, we're just not simply looking at reality.
Still, you've got to want it. You've got to want that escape, that high. Is the hunger for that, the hungry heart, is it higher today than it may have been in other times? And if so, why?
You know, we all know that that there are a lot of reasons that drive addiction. And really, we've always had addiction challenges, whether it's with alcohol or anything else. I think what's changed is that we really do treat opiates through FDA-approved drugs as if it's an option that should be made available for almost any pain or discomfort. And if we're going to do that, we have to accept the fact that opiates are extraordinarily addictive. It's apparently a high that is like no other. And I believe that this epidemic is being driven by a government-approved approach to painkillers.
We're going to look at that. You said in the speech nearly 80% of Vermont's incarcerated population in prison, jail, are either addicted or in prison because of their addiction. Your big push here for fiscal reasons and effectiveness is for treatment, not law enforcement or imprisonment, number one. Why?
Because it hasn't worked. And, you know, we continue to lose the war on drugs, quote unquote. And we, at some point, you got to pause and say, okay, so what are we doing wrong? Now, here's what I think we're doing wrong. With opiates, you have a very small window to convince people that treatment is a better option than addiction. You know, folks who are addicted to opiates are the best deniers and the best liars that you'll ever meet. And bottom line is, it's when the blue lights are flashing, when you've been busted, when you're down and out, that you're most likely to get your treatment. So in Vermont and probably the other 49 states, if they're like Vermont, our court system, our judiciary system, is not set up to deal with that moment of opportunity. So what we're going to try to do here is move our judicial system so that our prosecutors have a third-party independent assessment that figures out, Tom, whether you are an addict, someone we should be disappointed in perhaps, angry at perhaps, but not fearful of, or whether you're someone we should fear. If you're someone we should fear, we're going to put you through the old court system and lock you up. If you're someone that we might be mad at or disappointed in but think you can be treated, we'll offer you treatment right there. And if you agree to it, and then you comply with it, and we're going to raise the money, we're going to spend the money to follow you closely and give you the services you need, just like any other disease, kidney, heart disease, or any other healthcare challenge, then you'll never go through the court system.
Governor Shumlin, we've just got 20 seconds here. What's been the response from your fellow Vermonters since your speech? Way to go, Governor? Or, hey, what are you doing tying us to a heroin epidemic?
Well, you know, this is not a cheery subject to talk about, so no one's saying, hey, thanks for being so cheery, Governor, but this is what they are saying. They're saying, listen, we recognize we have this problem in every area of our community, probably every area of the country, but I'm pleased that we have the commitment from all of us to work together to come up with a solution to what is a healthcare crisis and stop the denial.
Governor Peter Shumlin of Vermont. Governor, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a new cry gone up on the heroin threat. The governor of pastoral Vermont gives his whole State of the State speech over to the scourge of heroin and prescription opiates. They are big and bad in Vermont and all over these days, really. New documentary out about the problem there, The Hungry Heart. Here's Dustin's mother, Cheryl, talking in the documentary about the toll that heroin addiction takes on a whole family.
It will rip the closest family apart. And it's not just the addict alone that feels it. It's the grandparents, it's the aunts, the uncles, the mom, the dad, the siblings. It affects the whole family.
It's in Vermont, it's across the country, it's in our popular culture. Season premiere of the HBO comedy series Girls last night, Jessa Jemima Kirk tells her therapist here in this bit, in a group rehab session, she's not concerned about her drug use.
How long, Jessa, have you been using?
What do you want, Jock? Do you want me to cry? Is that what you want? About how my dad has been in rehab 12 times? About how I don't even have his number? Or my mother, how she can't even go to the bathroom on her own? Or how alone I feel and without a life vest? Is that what you guys want? Because I can do it. I'm really good at it. But it's really exhausting and boring. Heroin is really fun, but it can also kill you.
From the Girls season premiere last night, Vermont is raising the alarm, and it is an issue right across the country. I want to dig right on in here. Joining us now from Burlington, Vermont is Tris Coffin. He's U.S. Attorney for the District of Vermont since 2009. Tris Coffin, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And with us from Seattle, Washington, Caleb Banta Green joins us, research scientist, epidemiologist at the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Institute at the University of Washington Medical Center, a member of the National Center on Drug Abuse National Trends Work Group. Caleb Banta Green, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
Tris Coffin, you're in charge of law enforcement up that way. Were you surprised that the governor put this front and center in his State of the State speech? Does it merit that focus?
I think it does. And he was good enough to include us in some of the buildup to his rollout of this program. I think the governor's shown exceptional leadership by focusing in on this problem. It's a problem that is not unique to Vermont, but it is one that really affects our quality of life here. And one of the things we are good at here in Vermont is when we have an issue, we're good at kind of getting all the different people together to focus on that issue and come up with a solution. And the governor's actually extremely well situated to kind of pull in the different forces that are needed to address this problem.
We want to look at the drug flow that's afflicting your state, but Caleb Banta Green, we've spoken before about this, but here it is, Vermont, just putting it as big as you could in the state's conversation, the whole country paying attention. Is Vermont an outlier here, Caleb? Do they have a problem that's out of scale with the rest of the country or not?
They're no different than any other part of the country.
Meaning we've got a full-blown crisis all over?
Yeah, I mean, we have some variability, but essentially it's really touching every part of the country. We just saw the CDC just put out an article, and it actually showed that the increase in overdose death rates overall driven by opiates has increased 400% in rural areas over the last decade. So it's not just touching these big cities where it's been a historic issue. It's really pushing out into more rural and suburban places as well.
And what about the balance of prescription opiates versus heroin? What's got more, I don't know, use, or what's the bigger problem these days in your view, Caleb?
They're a highly intertwined problem. We still see more deaths right now from pharmaceutical opiates. We do have to be careful as we work on reining them in, because they are biologically the same in the brain. If you can't get one, you will go get the other, particularly when there's a cost incentive to do that. So probably I would say prescription opiates are still the bigger thing right now, but heroin is not far behind.
Triscoff, and this is kind of unbelievable. I mean, we opened the spigot ourselves. There were very good, or at least persuasive, arguments for it in terms of pain control. Now we are here a decade and change after opiates became much more part of the prescription drug offering, with a heroin problem as well. Do you see that same, you know, we used to talk about starting with marijuana. Now that's being legalized all over the place, and people are looking at drugs that have been legal and made legal in this country for quite a while now.
Well, I think it's important to point out that these are incredibly important medicines if used correctly. On the other hand, they're more prevalent prescription has made them much more widely available. And what I think, unfortunately, people don't understand, although they're coming to understand a lot more, is that these opiate prescription medications are really the functional equivalent of heroin. And so having that kind of a medication prescribed and more generally available in the community, sitting in someone's medicine cabinet where people for whom it isn't prescribed can gain access to it and distribute it to others, is really like having heroin lying around. And the ready access to those powerful, unbelievably addictive class of medications has really led to the addiction problem that we see. And just like Caleb was saying, it's very intertwined with heroin because of that addiction, which drives people to do such, you know, crazy self-destructive things. But if you can't get your opiate prescription medication, you'll look for that functional equivalent, which is heroin, which is much more inexpensive. And there will be a supplier who wants to fill that demand.
We've got.
I do think it's.
Yes, Caleb, please.
Really quickly on that point, I think it's very important to understand the difference between opiate dependence and addiction, and it sounds like semantics, but one is to be physically dependent on a substance and you would go into withdrawal. It's another to have psychological addiction and have persistent thoughts and keep seeking it and really be out of control. And that matters, because if a person is on opiate medicines, they're doing well, they're being carefully monitored, that person should do fine. When we see people switching over to heroin, it's because they're already abusing their pharmaceutical opiates. They're already smoking it or injecting it. At that point, switching over to heroin is a logical thing from a person biologically and physically. But I really do want to separate out this issue around, you know, for severe acute pain, cancer pain, some types of chronic pain, opiate medicines can be a good treatment option if they're really carefully monitored and controlled.
We'll look at treatment and more. Triscoff, and describe the flow to us. First of all, on the opiate medications and their use, the illicit use, I guess, in Vermont at this point, do you have a sense of how much of that is legally sourced and then turned to kind of dependency, non-painkiller, recreational, whatever you want to call it, use, versus what's being brought in, sold, stolen, and sold illegally?
Well, yes, you know, both in, I guess mostly our experience here is that, you know, the head of the largest heroin and opiate treatment clinic here will tell you that more than half of the people that are seeking treatment for opiate and heroin abuse say they got started with a legitimate opiate prescription medication.
Okay.
That is consistent with my experience with, you know, innumerable dependent heroin and opiate medication abusers. So there clearly is kind of a segue, and it isn't, you know, an ironclad railroad tracks kind of a thing.
Yep.
But the fact of the matter is, if you are using opiates, there is that risk. And as Caleb pointed out, it's incredibly important that that use needs to be supervised by a trained professional. And if we go off the tracks on that because they get diverted from someone's prescription, or somebody breaks into a home and steals them, or a pharmacy, or they get distributed through illicit drug distribution channels. None of that supervision happens. And there, it's really a formula for disaster, and a disaster that we're seeing.
What portion of the opiate medication illicit use in Vermont goes to illegal sources for that? Do you have a big, you know, illegal trade in opiate medications at this
point?
Sure.
Yeah, we have, and we've had it for a long time. The issue that I saw in kind of the early 2000s, we had a spike in heroin use. It kind of went away. Then when opiate prescription medications became much more widely available, I think, unfortunately, it developed a larger population with addiction problems. And therefore, when doctors went to turn that off and the formula for some of the leading opiate prescription medications was changed to limit their ability to be abused, people started turning to that black market, and black market both for prescription medications and also for heroin. Because when you're on the black market for this stuff, opiate prescription medications on the street are significantly more expensive than heroin. So, you know, basically out of economics, you end up turning to heroin.
Let's hear from some of our listeners as well. Please stand by U.S. Attorney Tris Coffin in Burlington, Vermont, and Kayla Bantagreen in Seattle, Washington. Susie's calling from Quincy, Massachusetts. Hi, Susie, you're on the air. What's your story?
Hi, Susie. I'm sorry. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
And I just want to, first of all, thank the governor for bringing this this problem into light so, you know, everybody gets to hear it. My story is I have a daughter who is living in Burlington now in recovery. She actually went to a recovery center in Burlington, and now she's living in a sober house. She's working full-time. She's, you know, she's in recovery. And
how did she get hooked? What happened, Susie?
Oh, started with sort of like what the governor said, very bright student in high school, started using drugs just to probably stay awake to do her work and things like that. And then was addicted to OxyContin, and then that moved to heroin. As the governor says, it's cheaper, and that's what started since she was about, started about 17 years old. She's now 25 years old, so she's been struggling for 8 years.
What do you hear from her? Does she feel alone, or like there are a lot of people out there with this trouble, Susie?
Well, she, kind of both. She feels alone, but the community in Burlington has been very, very helpful. The facility that she got help at was fantastic, actually phenomenal, and the sober house she lives in is great. I mean, they monitor her, they do urine testing, and she's got to have a job, she's got to pay her rent, she has to be responsible. And like another caller had said, it breaks families up. I have her daughter here right now in Massachusetts with me because she doesn't have custody.
Yeah, her mom, but making progress there in Burlington, Vermont. We're happy to hear that, but it's a problem. Susie, I appreciate your call. Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Craig, you're on the air, Craig.
Hi, Tom. What do we expect when we get so many young kids on Ritalin and they become codependent and we don't use enough natural therapies and they become addicted to the pharmaceuticals who just seem to care about the bottom line? And our people aren't getting enough exercise, and we're not teaching enough that people are accountable to the God of the Bible. And our hospital waiting rooms now in the psych ward are filled with young people.
Craig, let me pick it up right there from the Ritalin tie that you make. Kayla Bantagreen, what about it? Possibly a society that's too drug-oriented from the get-go here contributing to this, or is that beyond the pale?
I think about two major things when I think about primary prevention. One is stopping inappropriate access, not getting meds if you don't need them in your household. If you do, protecting them. If you don't need them anymore, throwing away. But I do think the mindset piece is important. We've had a tremendous increase in prescribing. And not just for these medications, but I think it's pretty fair to say that we've had an increase in prescribing for a whole range of medications, whether it's antidepressants, whether it's prescription-type opiates, whether it's psychoactive stimulants for ADD. And some of those medications may be fine and they may be helpful for some people, but I think what has really changed over the last 15 to 20 years is we see the medication as the fix, and that health is passive, and that we don't have to be active in our wellness. If I have diabetes and I get insulin, I better be watching my weight and not smoking as well. I can't just take a medication. So I think there is a – I feel like I'm getting older that we have a preoccupation with the quick fix, and certainly medications are seen as the ultimate quick fix, and they rarely are the fix in isolation.
Be careful on signaling that. PJ in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. PJ, you're on.
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Okay, what's your question?
I have a question if any of your guests have an opinion on the influences of the wars in Afghanistan, largest opium-producing region in the world, and the influx of heroin and also pharmaceutical-grade heroin being administered, you know, Congress allowing all this to happen.
PJ, let us pick it up. The source of this, Tris Coffin, do you draw a line from Vermont's full-blown heroin crisis, as your governor says, to the war in Afghanistan? What is the point of origin for most of this heroin?
I don't think the line to Afghanistan is clear. Most of the heroin raised in Afghanistan is destined for the European market, is what I'm told by our DEA. The bulk of the heroin, although not all of it, in the United States comes from Mexico and South America and is shipped up by one of the – or rather the cartels. We do have some heroin in the United States that comes from Asia as well, and I'm sure some from Afghanistan, but I wouldn't draw that close a line to it.
What's the pipeline into Vermont, Tris Coffin?
Well, it's the same pipeline that's shipped drugs throughout the United States for quite some time. You know, starts in South America or Mexico, comes across the southwest border or maybe into the Florida region and works its way up through a distribution chain that gets down into ultimately the slightly above street level and street level. And really what we're seeing more is because the demand has been turned on for whatever reason for opiates, there's a much more insatiable desire to have those. In Vermont and really many places throughout the country, I talk to my colleagues who are U.S. attorneys in different districts throughout the United States, and you know this is a issue that they're experiencing as well. And the problem is the demand for opiate by somebody who's addicted to it is so strong that really it will cause them to basically give away everything and do anything to get the drug.
It may be obvious that this is impossible from all the years we've talked about it, but could you shut down the pipeline, the supply into Vermont?
Well, obviously, for many years, our country has worked very hard to do that with only limited success. That being said, I think the efforts to reduce the supply side are essential but not sufficient. We need to keep doing what we do to raise the cost of doing business and hold people who sell essentially poison in our communities accountable. That being said, as I said, it's not sufficient, and we've got to dedicate more resources to reducing the demand side through effective drug treatment made readily available for people who need it when they're ready to take it, and also to prevent people from getting into this trap to begin with. Because once we get into either the treatment or the law enforcement modalities, you know, we're really in kind of a disaster time. And it's extremely hard to turn those things around. It's so much better to have an effective prevention program that keeps people from going down that
up front
pipeline in the beginning.
Caleb, what's the map of drug abuse look like in this country now? Does Vermont stand out, or are there regions that are more prone to heroin versus methamphetamines, let's say? Are there concentrations?
Let me start with heroin. I mean, we really do see heroin across most of the country. There are places where it's only come on lately, places like Florida that have not traditionally had much heroin, but they've had a lot of pharmaceutical opiates. But they're starting to see a little bit of heroin as well. So the heroin really is almost ubiquitous across the country. It's tremendously widespread. It does follow on. The methamphetamine is actually an interesting component. In some places, those in the western United States, methamphetamine is now brought up from Mexico. Those trafficking routes to rural areas as well as urban areas bring along the cocaine and heroin as well.
Caleb Banta-Green, please stand by in Seattle. Tristram Coffin, U.S. Attorney for the District of Vermont in Burlington, Vermont. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a new cry gone up on the heroin threat. The governor of pastoral Vermont giving his whole State of the State speech over last week to the scourge of heroin and prescription opiates. Here's Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin speaking to his state.
Every week, our drug task force estimates more than $2 million of heroin and other opiates are being trafficked into Vermont. $2 million a week. Due to our proximity to Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and other cities where heroin is cheap, dealers can make a lot of money from addicts in Vermont. A $6 bag of heroin in New York City can go for up to $30 here.
And on that markup, a lot of people, dealers are diving in, and a lot of users, full-blown crisis-scale usership, says the governor of Vermont, ready to use it. Tris, Caleb, we've got listeners around the country talking about how they see this in their neck of the woods. Andy says, always been a problem here in rural Michigan. Here's Justin in Vermont, grew up and live in Vermont. Says, I've known at least four people, Justin says, who've died from overdose. Many more who've been burgled, including myself, catalytic converters cut out, copper pipes pulled from houses, in some cases without turning off the water, countless cases of failed potential. Tris Coffin, what about the knock-on effect of this in communities? The crime, the cost of it. This is not a Vermont product. This is not cheddar cheese. This money's flowing out.
Sure. Every amount of heroin sold in Vermont comes from outside of the state. It has to be paid for somehow. It's not unusual for a heroin addict to have a daily habit that costs $250, $300, $400 a day even. That money has to come from somewhere. Initially, an addict will go through every penny of their own money, their family. They'll steal from their parents, their brothers, their sisters, their grandparents, whoever they will trust them. And then they'll start committing these ancillary crimes. And we're clearly seeing that in Vermont. We've had an uptick in burglaries throughout the state. Armed robberies are way up. Bank robberies are a much more common crime. And virtually all of these crimes that occur are to get that money because somebody's so desperate to feed that habit.
Caleb, here's a listener, Marcus, who says he'd like more analysis on the user base. Says it's too simplistic to say it affects all groups the same, which the governor was more or less saying with us a few minutes ago. Marcus says it's rare for anything to affect all groups the same. Let's get the data and look, you know, based on economics, gender, age, race, whatever. Can you focus us more tightly on where the most serious use occurs, Caleb? What about this idea that it's everywhere? Yes, but what about concentration?
Well, I think the most important thing, and I'm part of a national drug trends work group that the National Institute on Drug Abuse sponsors. And what we're seeing really is in all of these places that these are 21 cities across the United States. They're talking about heroin. And it's the first time we've ever had uniformity on a drug issue. And this started back in 2012 talking about this. And the uniform piece of it wasn't just heroin. It was outside of the core urban area was the big growth area. And most importantly, young people. That, I think, is the demographic. So the demographic is we start having high schoolers using prescription opiates to get high. And they, within a couple of months to years, may escalate onto heroin. The driving trend nationally in terms of drug treatment emissions is young adults 18 to 24. And that matters for a lot of reasons. Those are people who are very young, who are trying to develop their lives, their selves, their identity, their career paths, and it's getting interrupted by addiction. And if we can get them into drug treatment, medication-assisted treatment with methadone or buprenorphine, which will hopefully keep them alive for the rest of their lives, they're still going to be struggling with that addiction potentially for many, many decades. So the most important demographic piece is that it is young adults and youth, because we're really talking about a lifetime that we need to keep these folks alive with drug treatment. And if they're using with infectious disease and overdose prevention, because those overdose deaths that your previous caller mentioned or the previous person who wrote in, none of those need to happen. Most overdoses that do happen can, in fact, be reversed with a simple antidote called naloxone before they become fatal. So we really need to get that information out there. We need to let people know that opiate addiction is relatively widespread, but that we can do something about it.
Tris Coffin, young people, and that means a lifetime of struggling with this. But are there really no distinctions you're seeing? I don't know, income-wise, employment-wise, region-wise, even within your state?
No, I think what Caleb was saying really describes the profile here, which are young people, typically people kind of just out of high school, really kind of trying to get started in life and moving forward. And nothing will stop you from doing those things quicker than being addicted to opiates. And that is what we're seeing. And I think what the governor is talking about, say it's sort of across the board. Really, I think what he's trying to describe is this isn't just a wrong side of the tracks problem. Unfortunately, it's something that afflicts you know, kids from stable families with good parents. It's not just people who are socioeconomically disadvantaged for one reason or another. It's indiscriminate in that way, has been my view about it.
We've got Valerie writing to us here. I lost my beautiful daughter September 2012 to heroin. I'm getting an anxiety attack just writing about this. Adam says, yep, I live in Vermont, and three blocks from my apartment, four people were busted with 500 bags of heroin. Adam pointing to the OxyContin trail behind a lot of this as well. Let's go to Bennington, Vermont. Linda's calling. Linda, you're on the air.
Hi. So one of the things that I listened to this on the State of the State was that I was really glad to hear the earlier caller talk about that there's no difference here than the rest of the country, and it really concerns me to hear the word epidemic and crisis because it's such an emotionally charged word, and it seems like it normalizes it more than what our data is actually telling us. For example, we have national data that just came out, and it doesn't indicate that Vermont is going up in usage of these substances. Yes, there are consequences, and we certainly need to look at it, but I'm worried that we're socially norming the use and everybody thinks everybody's doing it when, in fact, our data is saying that it's not going up.
Linda, you may be right, but why would the governor use this language, full-blown crisis, in such a prominent setting then?
Well, I have my suspicions about that, and I think that's about his own agenda that we have. When you look at people in recovery, they will tell you they started early onset of use with alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana. And we're not talking about those things that can lead to other addictions like opiate addiction. And I think that it's alarming to me that he says there's no national consensus on what works in prevention when there is. And in fact, Vermont is leading the way in prevention. And our data that was just released this last month shows that we have reduced the use of every substance in Vermont among our youth, except for marijuana and stimulants.
Linda, stand by. Caleb Bantagreen in Seattle. What about the national data, the Vermont data? Does it justify the governor's term crisis?
I think because there's a lot of issues in there. I think that what we're talking about with opiates is that because the potential for fatality, even if the numbers are smaller than marijuana, we do think it's quite important. And because we have the ability to prevent those deaths and prevent infectious disease with syringe exchange, it warrants that. The connection with pharmaceutical opiates with other substances is a strong one. It does not exist in isolation. It is tightly related to young people who are also using marijuana and also using alcohol. That's a very important point. It does not exist in isolation. When we dig into the data in Washington State in 2006, we added a question, have you used prescription opiates to get high in the last month? It's about 9% of high school sophomores that actually first started to tick down in more recently. But the association with marijuana use was extremely high. But we also found almost nobody reported using heroin who hadn't also used prescription opiates. So this is a clustering. This is sort of oftentimes a profile of a younger person doing some risky stuff. It's the set and setting of use. If the mindset is, I'm going to use my Vicodin I saved up for my wisdom teeth extraction and have it with alcohol and I'm hanging out with a bunch of people partying, the chances of initiating addiction are much higher.
Tris Coffin, how about this? The governor did not say much about marijuana. We look around the nation, we see a lot of marijuana legalization going on. Now, your governor's pointing at the opiates. Linda calls from Vermont and says, hey, don't forget this alcohol-marijuana connection. What about this problem in the context of a trend toward relaxing marijuana laws?
Well, you know, a couple things. The caller's comments about the statistics that came out, I'm not sure of what statistical study she's talking about, but she may be talking about the Vermont Youth Behavior Risk Survey, which is involves high school kids. One thing we've noticed is that the trend towards opiate usage is tends to start just after high school. Caleb mentioned 9% being the percentage nationally throughout the country for high school kids having ever used a prescription medication that wasn't prescribed to them. In Vermont, for opiates, we're typically 14-15% for juniors and seniors in high school. That's a good notch more, and to me, that's a really concerning statistic. To your other question, Vermont has a long and not proud, frankly, history of being one of the leaders in the country in use of alcohol by young people and use of marijuana by young people. And I think we do need to acknowledge that there's something about Vermont and Vermonters that has been more prevalent than almost any other state in the country towards substance abuse issues. And I frankly do think that there's some connection. It's not ironclad, not railroad tracks, but there's some connection between heavy use of alcohol and marijuana as substances and, moving into opiates.
Caleb, we've got a listener here who writes, legalize marijuana and you will see opiate addiction drastically decrease. Spain and Portugal, prime examples of this. Is there evidence that legalizing marijuana moves people away from opiate use, Caleb?
No, there's no evidence of that. I think what we don't know is we are living in a very interesting dynamic times in terms of drug use and drug policy and drug laws and what drugs are substitutes and which drugs are more harmful than others and in what ways, whether it's legally or medically or socially. Things are really in flux right now. I think that's the uniform thing. And I also think sort of the uniform issues around substance abuse are a little bit broader than some of these nuances. Is it that drug? Is it this drug? Addiction is really the core issue I think we're talking about. Right now we're talking about in the context of opiates, particularly because of the lethality, but we really need to be talking about addiction more broadly.
Let's go to New York, Messina, New York, and Stephanie. Stephanie, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
What's your story?
I would just like to say that Governor Shumlin has hit the nail on the head. I am not a Vermonter, but I would vote for him. My daughter is 18. And she is a heroin addict. She started using heroin to self-medicate. She's been sober for 4 months, not by choice, because she was arrested with federal charges for conspiracy to possess. She has been around several people who have overdosed. One of her friends actually overdosed right in her bedroom. It wasn't even enough to scare her.
Stephanie, how did she get heroin? Did she go from, oxy stuff to heroin, or what was her path?
She was abruptly stopped from antidepressants. Therefore, she started to use marijuana to self-medicate. That, in turn, wasn't the feeling that she wanted to get. And then she started smoking and snorting heroin, and then it turned into injecting it.
Was it hard for her to get the heroin, do you know, Stephanie, or was it easy?
Well, in my community, from my point of view, it's easier to get heroin than it is to get marijuana.
Wow. And you're all for the governor's focus on this. Stephanie, I appreciate your call. Tris, our earlier caller, Linda, said she's afraid that pointing this out, framing it so prominently, leads to a social norming of heroin and opiate use. What do you say, U.S. Attorney?
I don't think it leads to social norming. I think it faces up to a problem that is, existing. I mean, we've got, 50 to 70 people a year in Vermont dying from heroin and opiate prescription medication overdoses. We typically have 8 to 10 murders in the state. It's a little more than typically the number of traffic fatalities that we have. It is, in my experience, having been U.S. attorney for 4 years and a prosecutor for about 12 years beforehand, it's the biggest public safety issue our state has faced. We've been lucky not to have some of the problems that some other states have had, but this is really a biggie out there right now, and it's definitely time to get a concerted effort to address it.
Caleb Bantagreen in Seattle, are we turning a corner on this as a country or still headed deeper into this territory? And what does the Vermont governor's very prominent focus on this signal to you?
We're in the midst of this. We've turned no corner. You have to see a problem to deal with it. So I think that's really what it represents, is we need to be talking about this problem. And people need to be mindful that this is a serious problem. It's not okay if your kid is using somebody else's pain pills. That's not an okay thing. We need to know that addiction treatment really works. It saves lives and it's cost effective. And that medication-assisted treatment is what does that. So we really need to have that conversation. And we're in an exciting place with the Affordable Care Act, where theoretically with parity for mental health and substance abuse, we should be able to address this. I think right now that's really what we need to focus on, is getting people who are using into treatment and also keeping them alive with infectious disease and overdose prevention. We have to be keeping these folks alive in order for them to really turn that corner themselves and move ahead and create themselves and create a safe and healthy life for themselves.
A big bell rung here by the governor of Vermont, Peter Shumlin. Caleb Antigreen in Seattle, we really appreciate your being with us again today and the sharp eye that you keep on this nationally. Thank you for joining us, Caleb, from Seattle.
Thank you.
Caleb Antigreen, the University of Washington Medical Center Alcohol and Drug Abuse Institute. Tristram Coffin, U.S. Attorney for the District of Vermont, joining us today from Burlington. Tris Coffin, thank you very much and good luck to you there.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
To all of our listeners in Vermont and well beyond, thanks for your insights and contributions today on air and online. We always welcome those. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.